on today's Run to the Top podcast.
One person's knee pain might be coming from the hip and another person's might be coming from the foot. So some people might need a lot of soft tissue work. Some people maybe have never been adjusted and there's a lot of joints that just aren't moving and we'd focus more on that. For somebody else, it might be that they need to really do their hip and glute exercises for 4 weeks.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. And now here's your host, Stephanie Atwood.
Welcome, everyone. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, runner, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. Today, we're focusing on marathon injuries. This week's special guest is Dr. Sandy Baird, doctor, mother of two, and athlete. Dr. Baird specializes in sports injuries and will be talking today about running injuries, especially marathon injuries, prevention, and treatment. Dr. Baird is the perfect person to talk with because she works on clients, mostly athletes, daily as a licensed chiropractor. Chiropractic has become extremely important to athletes to keep them protected from injury and informed as they heal. Join us as Dr. Sandy shares insight on common running injuries and reveals her story of how she started her professional life as a civil engineer and ultimately became licensed as a chiropractor. Stay tuned for some great information about recognizing, avoiding, and treating running injuries before you get sidelined. But first, let's acknowledge our sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by one of our favorite training apps, Strava. You probably already know Strava is the social network for athletes. You can track all your workouts, runs, and other activities, so it's a great training log, but it also doubles as a social network. Later in the episode, we'll share more about how we use Strava and how awesome it is. Plus, we'll give you the details on how to enter to win a free entry into the 2018 New York City Marathon, plus a $500 travel stipend from Strava. Later in this episode, I'm going to tell you about a great opportunity to meet the Runners Connect coaches and fellow ambitious runners in one of the most scenic running venues in the country. So welcome back to today's podcast and our wonderful guest, Dr. Sandy Baird. I'm going to share a brief bio, and then we'll have a chance to meet her and let her share her story. Dr. Sandy and I are focusing on how to stay injury-free for all running distances, and especially the longer ones that require more pavement pounding like the marathon. We'll also look at the signs of potential problems and when to pull back on your training. Two levels of treating injuries can be self-monitored and treated without professional help, but there is a time when you must seek a professional to move out of the injury cycle. We'll cover all of this and more with Dr. Sandy Baird. Let me tell you a bit about her. Dr. Baird is a graduate of Life West Chiropractic College, where she specialized in sports injury management and extremity adjusting techniques. Dr. Sandy is a certified active release technique provider, which requires undergoing a rigorous credentialing process that includes in-depth knowledge of muscular skeletal structures in the entire body. She is also certified in Graston technique and Spider Tech taping, which have become the gold standard treatment for soft tissue injuries. Before obtaining her chiropractic training, Dr. Baird received a BS in engineering from UC Berkeley and graduated with top honors as a certified massage therapist from the National Holistic Institute's training program, providing her with a strong background in anatomy and biomechanics. A lifelong athlete, Sandy draws on her athletic and academic experience to provide a comfortable and effective treatment experience that best addresses the needs of her patients. Sandy works daily with injured athletes and has a wealth of information to share. Let's learn more about running injuries from an expert. Welcome, doctor and friend, Sandy Baird.
Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for having me here.
Totally. I'm so glad that you were able to do this, Sandy, and I really appreciate your taking the time to do it. I always start off with four basic questions, and please oblige me here. The four questions are, how old are you now? Where were you born? Where are you living now? And since we're a running podcast, what is your favorite race distance or type of race?
Well, I'm turning 40 this week.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I was born in Michigan, but I don't remember too much about it. My parents moved out here when I was very little, so I'm living in Oakland, California now. And I love anything on the trails. So I do most of my running on the soccer field these days. But if I had to pick a race, I think I would pick a trail 5K.
Gotcha. Okay, so now we're going to be moving into some questions, and I know our listeners are really interested in the whole marathon injury thing, but I would like to start off with what brought you from starting out as an engineer and having a BS in that area and then moving into chiropractic?
Well, I've always been really drawn to hands-on work, and in a lot of ways, I thought that's what engineering would be. I found it to be a little bit less so, but, you know, I was working in the field for several years and, you know, I was kind of slogging along in it. Just, it was paying the bills and there were some things I enjoyed about it. I always knew it wasn't quite the right fit, but I was hanging in there until I developed a repetitive strain injury in my wrist and forearm. And it was, you know, just moving on and on, like getting worse and worse. I couldn't grab the mouse and use the computer for more than a few minutes without feeling like I was just going to scream.
Wow.
I couldn't even like mountain bike because grabbing the handlebars on my mountain bike was just like so much pain. It was really frustrating.
Definitely.
And I was really angry at my job. Not that it, you know, I was just so angry at that point. I tried like PT, I tried stretching it, I tried icing it. And it just wasn't really getting any better. I eventually had a hand surgery and I had more PT. And just got to a point where I couldn't stand it anymore. And I just quit my job.
And yikes.
Yeah, it was a big, big thing. You don't really think that's a professional thing to do, but I just had to do it. I couldn't take the situation any longer. So kind of on a whim, I enrolled in some massage classes because I had always thought that would be a really fun thing to do. And as soon as I started massage school, it was like this whole new world opened up to me. You know, I tell my friends sometimes, like, it feels like that game Super Mario Brothers, when you like, you get to this new land and like all of a sudden all these like other tunnels and other worlds open up. Uh-huh. And there's just choices. You know, I could go into PT, I could go into chiropractic, I could go into osteopathic medicine. You know, and after some research, I decided that chiropractic was the tunnel that I was going to choose there.
And then you went to the National Holistic Institute for your chiropractic, or was that somewhere else?
So I went to the National Holistic Institute for my massage training. Mm-hmm. And then I immediately after went to Life West here in Hayward, California for my chiropractic training.
And what does that involve? What does the training for chiropractic actually involve?
Yeah, so it's 3 to 4 years of grad school work, and it involves classes like anatomy, biomechanics, biophysics. You know, you basically learn how to manipulate the spine on a physical sense, but you also learn all about the body. You learn about the nervous system, the skeletal system, the endocrine system, and kind of just different ways to put it all together.
Wow. So 3 to 4 years, that's pretty intense.
Definitely.
So I wanted to mention the name of your practice because I realized that I had left it out before. We'll certainly talk about it again at the end, but Riverstone Chiropractic is the practice that you opened after having, I know, spent some time working at other places as well, kind of learning the ropes. Mm-hmm. Riverstone Chiropractic is here in Oakland, and we'll get that contact information a bit later. How much of your practice these days is actually dealing with runners?
I would say probably about 75%.
Wow.
Yeah. And so most of these runners, they're already working with some kind of training group or a training plan, or they have like a certain race that they're training for. You know, there's some people who are running, like, let's say just for fun or just for exercise. Mm-hmm. But most of them are, they identify as serious runners, even mm-hmm. though they might not be at a very competitive level. It's very important to them to stay injury free and compete in their events.
And when you treat runners, I know one of the things that we all want to avoid is getting injured. How many people who come to see you do it as a preventative thing, and how many wait until like maybe they should have come in sooner before they come in to see you?
Yeah, I don't know the exact numbers, but I feel like it's probably more people. I think it's kind of human nature to push things off until the last possible minute. So I think it's probably more people that come in once something is already acting up,
right,
versus people who are, you know, they've heard great things and they just want to do some prevention.
So could you tell us what is active release technique, Graston technique, and spider taping?
Sure. So active release techniques is a manual therapy treatment. And the best way that I found to describe it is it's kind of like a deep tissue massage that is more specific and more effective. So a lot of times it involves patient motion. So it's called active because the patient is shortening the muscle to lengthening the muscle as I apply a contact. And so the idea behind this is that it breaks down adhesion in the muscles. And we can talk about that later. But it's basically when these sticky, tight areas form in the muscles due to overuse. And then Graston technique is another therapy that would also help break down adhesions, but it involves tools. So it's a 7-piece toolkit, basically, and they're shaped different ways for different body areas. And it's pretty easy on the practitioner's hands to be able to use tools versus always using their hands. But it's another great way to get into that adhesion or scar tissue and kind of smooth out the muscle fibers so that the muscles can function better. And then spider tape, it's a type of kinesiology tape. It's gotten pretty popular over the last few years. And you can use it in a couple of different ways. You could use it, for instance, to support the knee. Like you can tape the knee to support the kneecap or to support some of the other structures of the knee. And then the more traditional way to use it is the theory behind it is that it pulls up the skin and some of the soft tissue so that there's better circulation and flow underneath it. And so that promotes healing.
With spider taping, how much of that can people do on their own? And when is it really best for them to have help? It seems to me like it would just be kind of hit and miss if you were doing it on yourself because you wouldn't really know what you were trying to change.
That's correct. There's a lot of YouTube videos out there. And I think for some of the more simple issues, you could probably tape yourself if you watched enough videos and if it kind of made sense to you why you were taping in which direction. But for the most part, you're better off getting a professional tape job.
Now, I know from my own experience with all three of these that the Graston technique just drives me crazy because it's kind of a raspy thing. And I'd like you to talk more about that maybe a little bit later. But the active release technique really works extremely well. And although it's uncomfortable, it also seems to have a lot of benefit. And the spider taping, I guess that's more of a preventative thing or once an injury has happened to try to keep it from getting worse and still allow the person to continue with what they're doing. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, I would say spider tech, you could use it preventatively or once an injury has already happened.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So with the whole idea of marathon specifically, but also running injuries in general, are there common running injuries that you deal with all the time? I'm guessing there are.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So some of the more common running injuries that I see would be heel pain, shin splints, runner's knee, also like IT band syndrome. And then I also see a lot of glute pain and sciatica.
And talk about those, both what causes them, maybe identify a little bit about how they feel. But I know you and I've had this discussion before, and oftentimes the pain is in a completely different place than where the problem actually lies.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So a lot of them are due to overuse, right? So just same motion happening over and over and over. And when that happens, the muscle fibers, they can break down and they can develop this adhesion that I've mentioned before. So the most common one that I treat is knee pain. So maybe we can talk about that as an example.
Good.
And, you know, a lot of it gets thrown under the term runner's knee. You know, so people like to classify things. We've got swimmer's shoulder and runner's knee. But the interesting thing to me about knee pain is that even though somebody's knee is hurting, if you had two people in the room and they're both pointing to their knee, the issue could be coming from completely different places. You know, the knee gets trapped between the foot and the hip. And sometimes there's something in the foot that's not moving properly. Sometimes there's something in the hip or pelvis that's not moving properly. Sometimes there's even like a tightness in the glute or pelvis that's causing the knee to feel pain.
Can you take that another step and say what we could do as runners to help prevent an injury in that whole area, the runner's knee area, to happen? The second would be what we can do if we start feeling injuries in that area to maybe improve it. And then third, when we really need to come in to see you, because we've already gone past the point where whatever we do is going to make a difference.
Yeah. So in terms of prevention, you know, you could take the route of going in to see the chiropractor or the manual therapist, you know, maybe monthly, and just make sure that everything is moving properly.
What a good
idea. And everything's in correct alignment. So that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is to try different things at home. So even things like dynamic stretching before you exercise, before you go for your run, that's going to help a lot.
So talk about that just briefly in case nobody, you know, in case anybody doesn't understand what dynamic stretching is.
Yeah, so we draw the distinction between dynamic stretching and static stretching. And static stretching is holding a stretch for about 30 seconds, maybe 60 seconds. And dynamic stretching is more like general movements that you're doing. So like just some easy squats, easy lunges, inchworm type things, little walkouts, like hip circles, knee circles, things like that, that you're just warming up the joints before you go running. Mm-hmm. There's been some studies that show that if you do static stretching before running, you're going to have less power for the muscles. So you want to save the static stretching for after a run,
right,
and make sure you're warming up with dynamic stretching.
Mm-hmm. And the dynamic stretching, how much time would you recommend that somebody does that before they actually get into their training workout?
Like 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay. And I know you've got a whole section on your website that helps runners find out about some of these things without having to actually come in to see you. Please talk about that a little bit. Where is some of this stuff that they might be able to find just by looking it up online?
So I have a lot of articles that I've written over the years, and they're all available on the blog. And the best way to find that is to go to the main website at riverstonechiropractic.com and click on blog, and then just kind of scroll through. You'll see, you know, what catches your eye. I also have a YouTube channel where I have a lot of foam rolling and movement exercises videoed. So that's another resource, and that's also under Riverstone Chiropractic.
Excellent. And these running injuries, now back to the knee thing. So the first thing is kind of just people using, or especially runners using, conscientious stretching, dynamic stretching, thinking about warming up before their main workout to maybe completely avoid injuries. And of course, that's the best. But of course, you don't know that you might have had an injury if you didn't do it, unless mm-hmm. you actually experience an injury. So then the next level would be this pain in one's knee. And what would you suggest to do at that point?
Yeah, so I would suggest to do some self muscle release or muscle work. And you can do that by using a foam roller. There's also a lot of other tools on the market. There's yoga tune-up balls, and there's other muscle recovery tools.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, often a really simple thing that can eliminate knee pain is to roll out your quads with the foam roller.
Really?
Yeah. So sometimes it's just the quad muscles get so tight that they're pulling on the knee, and that's creating the pain.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like the first thing to try, right? If it works, then you knock your knee pain down, and you do that for a couple of weeks and it doesn't come back, and then great. If you try that and the knee pain's still there, then try working on your hip. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's different things you can do with the ball and the foam roller to loosen up the tissues of the hip. And if that is what's causing your knee pain, then you can sometimes release that at home. You can also try strengthening your hip at home. And there's some pretty specific like running exercises you can do in terms of strengthening the glute medius, the outer hip muscle. And these are things like clamshells and stepping out to the side with a band that you can find on my YouTube channel, or you can find them in other places as well. So that's another thing people could try.
Yeah, I know Run to the Top also has some exercise programs that they offer people that are these kinds of things that you're talking about, like the clamshells and the general hip strengthening and that type of thing. So there are lots of resources out there, but it really is a matter of the runner actually taking the initiative to get out there and figure out what they want to do and then following through with it. So the third phase then is that maybe they've figured out that they need some help. And how do you help with that? Because I know you've helped me, so I'm sure you're helpful to lots of people.
Yeah, so once someone determines that they need help, then we do an exam. And you know, that's where we figure out that one person's knee pain might be coming from the hip and another person's knee pain might be coming from the foot. And so once we do the exam and figure it out, that's when I can start to determine what types of therapy people are going to need, right? So some people might need a lot of soft tissue work. Some people maybe have never been adjusted and there's a lot of joints that just aren't moving and we'd focus more on that. For somebody else, it might be that they need to really do their hip and glute exercises every day for 4 weeks. So we kind of put together a more custom plan at that point.
Yeah, it sounds to me like actually coming in, you said this at the beginning of the interview about coming in maybe once a month and checking in with their chiropractor. If they're in our area, then checking in with you once a month helps them to stay on track, right? So if they are experiencing problems, then you can kind of nip it in the bud. And if they aren't, then you can say, you know, keep up what you're doing or, you know, stay with what you're up to already.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot out there, right? Like it's a big job to figure out what you need to strengthen, what you need to mobilize, what you need to loosen up. And it can be helpful to have some professional guidance on that.
Yeah, I want to come back to this marathon training, how the extra distance does exacerbate a lot of the issues. But I'd like you to talk about, in terms of your practice, and one of the benefits that you have is this running analysis. Can you talk about that a bit more and how that would benefit a runner to determine areas where if they haven't been injured, they might get injured, or if they are injured, it can help define possibly where that pain is coming from and how to correct it?
Yeah, I've been doing these running analyses for the last couple of years, and it's been pretty amazing at what you can find when you can slow down time. And so basically what it is, it's two different views of you running on a treadmill, a view from the back and a view from the side. And then there's a checklist that I go through. It's about 16 points, and it looks at all the things that can be happening biomechanically. So, you know, when you go to a running shoe store and they say, like, okay, hop on the treadmill, and they video, and then they tell you what's going on with your feet to help you pick out the correct shoes for you. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like that, but it's for your full body. And so it's good to know that maybe your feet are rolling in or pronating too much and that you need a certain shoe. But it's better to know that if we found one of these biomechanical flaws going on in the hip or at the knee that's causing the ankles to roll in, there's things you can do to correct that, so that you'll run more efficiently and not have injury. So I've found actually that people who have some sort of injury and either they're not quite getting all the way better, or maybe they haven't done a lot of treatment, but just, you know, that last percent that's just not getting better. If we do the video and the analysis, and then I give them the exercises that are specific to what I find and they do those injuries seem to disappear.
Wow. That's really great news, and I know you've started doing this. I think I need to come in and see you for this because I'm at a point where I think I need some help and I can't figure it out on my own. And so having someone else look at me and taking that another step. I know when you go into a running store and they evaluate your run, they take, you know, 5 or 10 seconds to do it. They are not trained in any of this medical stuff necessarily. I mean, it would just be the luck of the draw if they happen to have medical information or training. And what you're saying is that you spend however much time. How long does this take?
So actually filming it doesn't take that much time, but me sitting down and looking at everything frame by frame and going through the system that I learned at UCSF running clinic, that takes about an hour for me to do.
Yeah.
And I actually really enjoy doing it. I mean, as an engineer, it's really fun for me to look at all these different angles and different lines and see what's going on joint by joint.
So cool. It makes so much sense to me. And this is one of those preventative type of actions. If you're not already hurt, then, you know, go in and see if there are any things that are abnormalities in terms of just being a really great runner in terms of form, and then you can help them catch that, help us catch that, because we're both runners too, and then help us improve or help us alleviate any of the injuries that we might be dealing with. That's what a terrific service that you have.
Yeah, thanks. It's really fun to do too.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So let's go back to this marathon training, because this might be the perfect time for a lot of our listeners to think about getting that running analysis, because these long distance training runs and training programs, whether they're on trails or whether they're on roads, they exacerbate a lot of injury potential because of the repetitive nature of running. Can you talk about that some?
Well, I think... Yes. It's a very repetitive thing. And we have this other repetitive stress on top of that, which is our chronic sitting, right? A lot of us are sitting 8, 10, 12 hours a day. A lot of us are hunched forward for a good part of that at desks or in chairs and whatnot. And those things, so a big thing that happens with runners, well, sometimes we say that sitting kills our running. And we say that because the hip flexors, right, the muscles right in the, basically the top of the thigh going up into the trunk, they get shortened. So they're just being held in the shortened position all day. Mm-hmm. And what that can do is actually turn off the muscles on the backside of the body. So if you're sitting all day, your glute max isn't going to be working so well. And so these other little glute muscles, some of the hip external rotators, they need to kind of kick in and do the work that the glute max is supposed to be doing. So you have this kind of inefficient system happening that you're trying to overcome in addition to adding miles, 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 miles. So that kind of creates a bigger situation.
Talk about the sitting a bit more then. I'm really interested in that. And what kinds of things can we do, getting up on a regular basis, stretching, whatever? How can we help that? Because as you said, I mean, it's just kind of the nature of a lot of our work these days, sitting for hour after hour after hour.
Well, I tell my clients that it's not too important what they do on their breaks. It's just more important that they take breaks.
How long?
Well, yeah, it really depends on your situation. I know there's a lot of company culture out there where you can't just pop up every 15 minutes and move around. But that would be my ideal situation if everyone could just sit up every 15 minutes. And I don't even do it myself. You know, when I'm catching up on paperwork, I don't want to stop every 15 minutes and do anything. But you know, just as often as you think that you're able to do it, you could do a stretch. Mm-hmm. You could stand up and do some arm circles. You could do some deep breathing. You could take a super quick walk, like a 30-second walk, just something to reset your posture so that when you come back to sitting, you know, you have a little bit more blood flow.
Wow. Wow. It's really that simple, but it's also like it has to be as repetitive as the marathon training itself. It has to keep happening.
Yeah. Those little things add up, right? Like every training mile you put in for your marathon adds up. Every posture break you can give yourself adds up.
Well, that is really useful information. Thank you for sharing that. Cause I know you've talked about this before, but I hadn't thought about it in terms of that. It has to be, we have to repeat moving and avoid this sitting for hour after hour after hour, and even getting up and maybe taking a water break, because of course drinking water is such an important part of our
exactly.
health too. So Sandy, talk a little bit about your online resources that you have, because you mentioned that before, but I'd like to hear it again. You have the YouTube and the blog.
That's right. Yeah. So on riverstonechiropractic.com, you can click on blog, and that's the best way to get to that. And then I think you could just search YouTube for my company name and that will pop up. I also have an ebook that I've written. It's a pretty comprehensive guide to fixing your plantar fasciitis. Mm-hmm. And that's basically foot pain, especially in the heel. I know a lot of runners have that.
Totally.
And that is available if listeners would like that. And actually the best way to do that is just to send a text. I've got something set up where if you text the word running book, just one word, running book, to 44222, you'll get a prompt that asks for your email address, and then we can send that right on over to you.
So running book 44222.
That's right. Regular data and messaging rates apply.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
I'm going to change the order here slightly, and I'm going to ask you about your opinion on paleo for nutrition, and also your opinion on minimal barefoot style running. Last week's guest was Dr. Brett Hill, who was also a chiropractor, and he's very much in support of both of these, and he had good defenses for both of them. I, you know, really appreciated the way he presented the material. But I'm interested in your opinion on both of those, and both the pluses and the minuses.
Okay, cool. Well, let's talk about paleo first.
Totally.
So I think paleo for nutrition is better than fast food. It's a really good starting point, I think, and a really good framework. And so I was pretty gung-ho about paleo. I ate paleo for about 2 years. I think I probably had all the t-shirts, bacon for breakfast and things like that. Uh-huh. But I have to say that I don't think it works for everybody. That is one of the big things. You know, it's very meat heavy. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of reasons, people either don't want to eat meat for ethical reasons, or, you know, you just kind of burn out on eating a lot of meat sometimes. Mm. And then I think, you know, it's pretty limiting. Like if you have a few food intolerances or food allergies, then I feel like it's kind of boring and you might not stick with it. So I'm just going to kind of throw that out there.
Okay.
And then I think, you know, there's a lot of things that I'm not sure what the phrase is for this, but you know, the lentils and things like that are not technically paleo. I think beans are not technically paleo.
Mm-hmm.
And the concern around lentils is that they have these things called lectins in them. And lectins are like part of the legume's natural defense mechanism.
Right.
And the idea is that they cause bloating and irritation in the gut lining. But for, you know, coming back to just for me, like it was just too much meat and I just wanted to eat something else. And I was terrified of lectins. I was like lecturing my friends, like, stay away from legumes. Lectins.
Yeah, I've heard other people you know? Like that too.
But like when it comes down to it, like I feel okay when I eat lentils. So I'm not going to worry about the lectins and I'm going to eat the lentils.
Well, I appreciate your opinion on this. Nutrition is such a hit or miss kind of thing. I mean, it really is much more opinion and also experience. You know, people have to try different things to see what makes them feel good. What has come to me, and I keep coming back to this because it just makes so much sense, is it's like the less processed food that people eat and the more variety of unprocessed food, the better off they're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of adhere to that myself, even though I have certain ideas about what I think is best for like for sports nutrition. But it's the nature of just staying away from the processed food that really seems to always work for me, and no matter what I'm trying to defend.
Yeah, I think that is really important. And also, if you do strict paleo for a period of time, and then you add some of these things back in, like the processed foods and the sugars, you kind of notice a difference. And you notice, like, you know, your body doesn't actually feel that great. You have joint pain or headaches or things like that.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I think it definitely focus on the clean whole foods.
Yeah. And then, of course, if you get into the ethics of it all, then eating close to the source makes so much sense to me for so many environmental issues and good health. So that's another talk, maybe another day. But let's move on to the second part of what Dr. Hill talked about, and that was minimal barefoot style running. So give me some of your, you know, your thoughts on that.
Okay. So I think, you know, with the minimal or barefoot thing, I don't see too much barefoot running happening anymore. I think that was pretty popular around like 2012 to 2014. You know, I do still see some of the minimal running happening. I think that, you know, something's really got, what's the word, vilified. Like I think Vibram Five Fingers really got thrown under the bus with some of this. There's an interesting study. It was in the Journal of Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise. Mm-hmm. And this was back in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a study looking at foot bone marrow edema.
Oh, okay.
after a 10-week transition to minimalist running shoes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so bone marrow is just looking within the cavity of the bone, right, in the bones of the foot. And they basically looked at switching from regular running shoes to Vibram Five Fingers. And there was an increase in bone marrow edema in the bones of the feet.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't find any soft tissue response. Just kind of reading through some of the notes I had in the study here, you know, there's no real worry about Achilles tendon issues or plantar fascia differences, things like that. They were just looking at some response in the bone marrow edema.
I see. So they just didn't deal with those other things.
They didn't deal with those other things.
Right. And Sandy, how many people were involved in this study?
Let's see. I don't think I have the number on that here. I just know that they divided them into two groups, and mm-hmm. 2/3 had this bone marrow swelling. And then 2 of the people in the study developed stress fracture.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to note that it maybe is not necessarily a bad thing that there's some bone marrow edema there, because what happens when bone reacts to stress is that it breaks down and then it builds up.
Right.
So if you have a weakness at one point, doesn't necessarily mean that later on it's going to still be weak.
Right.
So you know, it's a sign of remodeling when this bone is changing. And it's been pointed out that changing from walking to running, or changing something about your shoes, like putting a metatarsal pad in there, or even increasing any kind of training intensity, mm-hmm. those things can all cause this bone edema.
Mm-hmm.
And so the study is basically flawed because it's missing a control group. So, you know, we have no way of knowing whether it's people that are switching to these Vibram Five Fingers or switching to any different running shoe that's causing this edema, right? So I don't think we should put a lot of stock in that.
Yeah.
What I do think is kind of interesting is looking at the types of shoes that have been coming out in terms of the minimal shoes. And my understanding is that going from this big heel drop, like the 10 millimeter built up foam at the heel to zero at the toe of like traditional running shoes, that's kind of being replaced by like 4 millimeter or 0 millimeter drop. And, you know, to me, that feels like a pretty, pretty healthy thing. Like I wouldn't want to be running with heels on with this big slope.
Yeah.
It's just kind of common sense to me that you'd want to drop it down a little bit and kind of more like naturally mimic a running stride.
Right. Well, thanks for that input. And the notion of minimal, I think, takes on a much broader spectrum than just the, you know, running either totally barefoot or running in the five finger or 5 foot, whatever, five toe, whatever they're called, kinds of shoes that have literally no support under them whatsoever. To some of these shoes, like you're talking about, now they have zero drop or they have 2, 3, 4 millimeter drop. That still, I think, is considered minimal in a lot of marketing talk and also in a lot of the ways that people think about it. The one thing that I mentioned in my interview with Dr. Hill was that I think it has to be a gradual transition no matter what you're doing. If you're coming from that 10 millimeter drop and you try to go to something that's zero drop, it's pretty dramatic.
Yeah, you're going to have a big problem with that fast transition.
Yeah. But if you do that kind of gradually and test it out and see how it works, I do think that it helps with form. I think it's a, you know, it's a better way to use your body for the form rather than using equipment for the proper form.
I think that's a good point. And I think also people don't realize how slowly you need to transition.
And like what would you
using
recommend?
Them for like 5 minutes on a run one day and making sure you feel okay the next day.
Right.
You know, not like taking them out for a half hour run.
Yeah. Good point. Very good point. What kind of training plan for marathons do you prefer in general? What do you think is a good way for marathoners to get into that distance and to kind of move into actually succeeding with a marathon?
Yeah. So training plans, that's where I direct people towards a running group or a running coach because they have the most experience with that. But my big thing is just avoid the terrible twos, like too much too soon, right? Like you want it to be a reasonable increase.
Yep. Yeah, I think you and I might be talking about this a little bit later as well, because I totally agree with you. And I guess I've talked about this in almost all of the podcasts that I've recorded so far, is that we really have to look at doing these things as a lifestyle rather than a bucket list kind of item. So, you know, if you want to run marathons or if you want to be active for the rest of your life, then take time to get there, enjoy the journey, and also give your body a chance to physically and mentally adjust to it.
Yeah, that sounds really reasonable.
Yeah, well, thank you. Now, in terms of nutrition for you and your family, and what kind of suggestions you do have for marathoners to max out their nutrition, what are your thoughts on that?
So I laugh at the question just because I have two small kids, so talking about nutrition can get a little sticky around my house. you know, my kids eat really well. There's like four food groups. They eat them really well. Bread and cheese. Right. So they have those groups covered.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, how old are your kids for one thing?
So one of them's 5 and one of them is 1-year-old.
Uh-huh.
And the 5-year-old has not eaten a vegetable in many, many months. And we finally had to make an agreement that we were going to stop nagging her to eat vegetables if she will take 2 multivitamins a day. And that's just what we're doing with that.
Yeah. Fascinating.
In terms of how my nutrition is going, I think I'm a pretty boring eater. I do like the meal prep style. So I don't have a lot of time to cook dinners each night. So I prepare a bunch of meals in bulk on the weekends. And, you know, I just don't like spending that much time cooking. So I make pretty boring things. Like I'll roast a chicken, you know, a big pan of broccoli or asparagus, and then some sweet potatoes. You know, that's been working and it gets a little bit boring, but I try to switch it up, like maybe flank steak instead of chicken, or like switch the vegetables out I've actually been trying this thing for the last couple months, more like macronutrient counting or tracking.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more frequently called as like, you can eat how you want as long as it fits your macros.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so, you know, you basically go online, there's different technologies and websites that'll help you calculate your macros and then help you track them.
Yeah.
But basically you're trying to get to a certain amount of protein a day, a certain amount of carbs a day, and a certain amount of fat per day
right.
to meet whatever your training goals are.
Right.
And I'm actually finding it kind of challenging to get enough protein to meet my strength training goals. So that's kind of new to have that new challenge.
I have found that that's a problem because I am actually quite involved in understanding what we need in terms of those, the four or the three macronutrients, not the four that your kids eat.
Right.
And yes, people really don't have a sense of actually how to get energy from those different food groups. And it's, you know, it takes a little work because it's not the way that nutrition information is presented to us in our lives. We really aren't even introduced to grams, which is a really mm-hmm. important part of understanding, you know, how much you want to take in terms of energy. But that should be another subject because we're getting close to the end of time for this part of the interview. I have a couple of questions for you now, and in general, what experiences have had the biggest impact on your life and where you are now?
So probably quitting my one career and moving into the other career.
Wow.
And then also probably having children has been a big thing that's gotten me where I am now. And, you know, you just think about things differently, I think, when you have kids.
Totally. Yeah. Well, we're going to go pretty quickly past this. So thank you for sharing those because those are two big things. And of course you've transitioned them and with the ups and the downs of life in general, and you're moving forward all the time. I appreciate that. And I appreciate mm-hmm. our friendship because I've known you for a long time and I know a lot of what you've gone through.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And now you did say you had a free ebook that you're offering to people. So let's just go through that. They text you at runningbook as one word and then 44222 is the number, correct?
That's right. The number is 44222 and just one word text runningbook.
Runningbook. And that's about plantar fasciitis, which could be really useful to mm-hmm. most of us. We're going to be actually having a talk with a podiatrist here about plantar fasciitis and some of the causes of it. So I'm looking forward to
that.
We are going to change gears here and reintroduce the popular segment that was started by Tina Muir called The Final Kick. We'll be back shortly after recognizing our sponsors. Stay tuned. If you're not already on Strava, boy, are you missing out. Strava is the social network and fitness app for athletes. It's fun, informative, and keeps you and your friends fit. Literally millions of people use Strava to track their runs, rides, workouts, and connect with others. One of my favorite ways to use Strava is to connect with my running club. Strava makes it easy for us to follow each other's workouts. I can't tell you how many times just seeing how well other members of our group were running helped motivate me to get out the door. I also love being able to see all the data from my runs, like splits, elevation, and a map. It makes training so much fun. And the best part is that for a limited time, Strava's offering podcast listeners a chance to win an entry to the 2018 New York City Marathon plus a $500 travel stipend. It's the largest marathon in the world and notoriously difficult to get into. For your chance to win, just go to runnersconnect.net/Strava to enter and read the official rules. That's STRAVA, Strava. The 2018 Runners Connect Running Retreat is your chance to bond with fellow runners and learn directly from our awesome coaches. This year, the Running Retreat includes 6 awesome lectures from our expert staff of coaches, private one-on-one coaching time to discuss long-term training, goals, and anything you need help with, amazing runs through the scenic mountains of Blowing Rock that will leave you refreshed and ready to crush your race. Video analysis of your running form and specific exercises for how to fix your issues. Active stretching and strength training sessions. Now, I know what you're thinking. An adult running retreat? Really? For my vacation? Yes, and it's one of the best things you can do for your running. And if you're anything like our past attendees, you'll have a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You can learn more about the retreat at runnersconnect.net/retreat. This year's dates are August 23rd through 26th and September 6th through 9th. So reserve your spot before we sell out. So, do you know about the final kick, Sandy, or shall I tell you a little bit about it?
I don't know about the final kick.
It's just something that was started by Tina Muir, who was the first podcast host for Run to the Top. And what it is a series of questions. There's four of them, and it's not a test, so you're not gonna fail. But the first question is, what is your favorite local training run? And tell us enough that our runners could find it if they come to your city, where to park, name of starting point, how long, terrain, safety issues, etc. Something to share with our listeners.
Okay. My favorite park is Redwood Regional Park.
Mm.
And I think probably the best way to run there is to park at Skyline Gate and head out on Westridge.
Totally.
And then I think a lot of people like to do a loop down into the single track, but I kind of like doing out and back trails.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just say head out on Westridge mm-hmm. and set your time for however much time you want to go and just know it's going to take you, you know, about the same amount of time to get back.
Right.
You know, there's some really hilly spots, some rocky spots, but it's not really technical single track.
Right.
And then just lock up your valuables because it's Oakland.
Yeah. Well, I've run there many times and I agree with you. It's a great trail and it actually works really well. People who want to walk it can walk it and hike it. And people who want to run it can run it. And as you said, you can go out and back. So it's pretty difficult to get lost. None of my group has ever gotten lost there. And as far as safety goes, I think depending on what time of day you might want to not go by yourself if it's getting to be dark or if it's early in the morning. But during the day, I've always felt pretty safe being there. How about you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have too.
Yeah. So Redwood Regional Park, is that what it's called?
Yes.
In Oakland and starting from Skyline mm-hmm. Gate, which is one
That's
of
right.
the areas where you can park your car. How about a recommended running book? What's one of your favorite running books?
So don't kill me. This isn't technically a running book, but I think like every runner should read it.
Uh-huh.
And it's called The Supple Leopard by Kelly Starrett.
Uh-huh.
And I think we often forget about muscle recovery and overall mobility and things like that in our quest to run more efficiently. So I think this is a really good go-to. It's got a lot of great exercises in it that we should all be doing when we're logging lots of miles.
The Supple Leopard, L-E-O-P-A-R-D.
Mm-hmm.
By Kelly Starrett.
S-T-A-R-E-T-T.
S-T-A-R-E-T-T.
He's a pretty popular physical therapist in San Francisco.
I have to tell you that Dr. Brett Hill actually recommended Kelly Starrett as well. So he must be pretty, you know, a pretty good doctor.
Yeah, he's good.
All right. So third question, advice for new runners, especially to avoid injury, since that's your best area.
You know, work with a group and take it slow.
And words of wisdom or a quote for our listeners, either one.
I don't have a quote on hand, but probably words of wisdom would be to not compare yourself to others.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't know what kind of injuries or histories other people have. So even if you see someone running a way that you want to be running, don't assume that everything feels easy for them. And just listen to yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. So I do have final thing here is, do you have any questions for me?
Well, I would be curious to know how you change your training plans if somebody is injured.
Yeah, really good point. I think in a nutshell, my encouragement and my coaching style is to listen to your body. So if you're feeling that things aren't working the way you want them to, if you're too tired, if you're feeling aches and pains, then pull back, listen to it. If it means going and getting help from somebody, you know, that's a great resource. But it's like, believe in your body to be able to tell you what you really need and then get the help that you need to then be able to either continue on the training plan at a modified level or, you know, maybe it even needs to be put off to another time. So listen to your body.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Okay. Do you have someone or some subject about running that you would like me to include in a future podcast?
I think it would be cool to hear about somebody who was pregnant, either during their training or during a race or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Now, the interview not too long ago was from Dorothy Beale, and she has three children, and she did run while she was pregnant, although she didn't actually talk too much about that because we talked about other things as well. But she had a lot of good information on, you know, on running as a mother and sticking with it while she was pregnant. But we also have Alicia Montagna. I'm not sure about how to pronounce her last name, but I'd love to interview her too. Okay. That's a good one. So, Sandy, we are pretty much at the end here. Please give us your contact information and how our audience can stay in touch with you.
Yeah, the best way is to go to the website, riverstonechiropractic.com. And if you ever have any questions or need to call in, you can call the office here. It's 510-465-2342.
Thank you for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. Follow us and learn when you've won at the Runners Connect Winner Circle on Facebook at runnersconnect.net/FB for Facebook. Subscribe to Run to the Top at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, etc. Sandy, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
Thank you, listeners. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Keep sending us your questions and comments. We love them, and that really helps us to know how to program best for you. This is Stephanie K. Atwood with Run to the Top. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.